can return. Yet there's oh so much that you deserve. There's nothing to say, nothing to do. I'm nothing to give. I must leave.
All right, and it's the, what is this, the fourth floor, episode 7 of season 2, The Long Way Home. That's it. And I am Nick, and surprisingly absent tonight is, well, Liz, my lovely co-host. And instead, we have a very special guest, host of Indian, well, one of the hosts. It's like three hosts now, isn't it?
Yeah, we have three hosts now.
Yeah, Dan Jones from Indian Mojo, and I guess it's the Jacked Up Indian Mojo show now.
Yep.
And also a writer for the Game Effect. So Dan, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit besides what I've done, your interests and all that good stuff.
Well, you pretty much nailed it. I mean, I'm hosting the Indian Mojo show, which right now we're calling it the Jacked Up Indian Mojo show because we have a third host. I host it with Jeremy, who's been on the show on the fourth floor.
Yeah, Jeremy's been on.
And Jack Gardner, who's an intern at Game Informer. So I host that with them. And so when we brought Jack in, we added Jacked Up to the title because that's cool, you know.
Yeah.
And then other than that, yeah, I mean, I write for the Game Effect. I try to freelance write. I haven't, but we'll maybe talk about that at some point. But yeah, I play video games. Yeah, we'll talk, and you'll get to know me.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully that's what happens today. So yeah, it's been another slow week on our Facebook page followers. And you are making me a little upset, but that's all right because Christina liked the page, so we get another episode. Because for every like we get from here on out, we'll have another episode. So we're threatening. We're threatening you to like the show. Then that's facebook.com/therealfourthfloor with fourth spelled out, unlike any of our other stuff, because I'm a fool, and Facebook's stupid to deal with. So, The Real Fourth Floor, facebook.com/TheRealFourthFloor. Like our Facebook page. Running right through this real quick so we can get to the meat of the show. Charity of the Month. I have to give full disclosure on this Charity of the Month this month. And that is the Tool Bank, which you can find. Their website is baltimore.toolbank.org. And basically what the Tool Bank does is they provide tools at pennies on the dollar for local nonprofits. They have a whole bunch of different areas around the United States. Go to toolbank.org for more information. However, they are partnered with Home Depot, so I do work with them. So I do work for Home Depot, so full disclosure on that. I totally don't want you to think I'm being completely charitable. It's a little bit of a self-promotion, a little bit
You're
there.
Biased.
It happens.
So, I'm trying to like the fourth floor on Facebook because I don't think I ever have.
Oh,
I'm sorry, kill me now. I can't find it.
You can't find it?
Oh wait, okay, hold on. I just found it on your page.
Yeah,
liked. It's liked.
All right, good. So there we go, Daniel Jones. Now if we can add Daniel Jones to the list of people, so that's two episodes. So you get an episode next week. Hopefully, we'll see. So we'll jump right into weeks. Let's see, it's been a couple weeks since we've been on the show. I finished up Mass Effect 3, which we're going to talk about later on in the show. I'm not too sure if I provided a brief review of Space Marine on the last episode, but I did finish up Warhammer 40k Space Marine. Plan on talking about that later in the show. maybe for a little bit. I'll talk about it now. Why not?
What's going on outside?
Huh?
What's going on outside?
The fire engine. Yeah, yeah, that'll probably be edited out, but probably not, because this is a very bare-bones show here. So Warhammer 40K Space Marine, from THQ, which they're failing, and it's kind of hard not to see when you look at some of the games that they've come out from them recently, but it's also kind of hard to see when you look at some of the other games that have come out from them. But Warhammer 40K Space Marine was actually all right. If I had to review it for the game effect, even though it came out like 3 months ago, I'd probably end up giving it a 7. The story was what really intrigued me. Gameplay-wise, it had a really bad health regeneration system. In order to regenerate health, you had to execute an enemy, which could only be done in close combat, which isn't necessarily bad, but that was the only way to regenerate health. There was no random health pickup or regenerating health otherwise, and enemies hit so hard that if you were not carefully executing the last enemy left during a combat scenario, you'd probably end up dying during the execution of an enemy to regain health.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only played a little bit of that, and that game really is rough around the edges. It's there. The presentation was kind of blah. I don't know. I don't really care about the Warhammer universe that much, so I couldn't. I really just played like the first hour.
Yeah. I used to play a lot of the Games Workshop games. So actually, getting to use like the Space Marine, like the way that you're always told in all the books from that publisher was kind of cool. And even using the guns were kind of cool. They did a pretty decent job with the guns in terms of making them all feel different. But it also was to the point where there was only a couple guns that were ever really worth using, and certain guns were only pretty much useful in only like rare instances where it was like, oh, use the las cannon because you have snipers and you can pretty much one hit kill them with the las cannon. But outside of that, it wasn't terrible. Like I said, the regeneration system was horribly frustrating for the player. Even on normal difficulty, I was like, oh my gosh, I want to pull my hair out. And one of my friends, Andy, was telling me he played it and he got stuck at one of the bosses and just gave up because he couldn't beat him, no matter how hard he tried. And then I ended up beating that boss no problem and had a hell of a time with the final boss. But I managed to beat it, got the trophies for it, and I'm happy. It was nice. It was part of that free PlayStation Plus giveaway that Sony did.
Yeah.
During E3, which was really cool.
That's why I played it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was free, so I was like, all right, why not?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And then obviously Mass Effect 3. I finally beat that. We're gonna talk about that. I haven't had a chance to play any of the extended DLC, the extended ending, yet, get through to do anything with that, so I'm hoping that addresses any concerns people had. I don't know. And outside of that, it's just been, I've been starting Rock of Ages, which I'm going to review for the game effect, even though it came out last month. I don't really care. It's a game that I think people should know about. Once I get through it, I'll have a better impression. I've only played the first couple levels, so.
Isn't that the new Tom Cruise movie?
No, actually, it's like Marvel Madness meets Tower Defense, which I remember being like 6 or 7 and loving Marble Madness on the NES. So
all right.
I'm really, really loving Rock of Ages right now. But I'll pass it on to you, Dan. You're weak now.
All right. I've been playing a lot of my Vita, just because ever since I got one, I've been determined to not let that money go to waste.
Yeah.
So I've been playing with the Mod Nation Racers on it.
Yeah.
I got that when I bought it. I got it for free at a GameStop sale when I bought the Vita, and I just never really touched it. I played Stardust and Uncharted a lot, but finally like got into Mod Nation, and that game's a lot of fun, but man, it's frustrating when the artificial intelligence just somehow catches up to you, no problem, and you're like hitting all the boost pads, you're in first, you're like way ahead, and then like you're really close to the end, third lap, you're almost done, and then they catch up to you and you end up finishing third or fourth or something.
So it has rubber band AI.
Yeah, big time.
That's the worst part of that I had. That's the biggest problem I had with Mario Kart, although it usually works out in your favor, but yeah. Those kart games tend to have that rubber band AI just to add a level of challenge to it, which doesn't really match well. Have you done any of the creation aspect of that game?
Not yet. I want to beat the career first, and then maybe I'll jump into that. Usually, honestly, I'm not good at creating stuff. That's why I write about games and not make them. So, like, yeah. I'll just go online, and, like Little Big Planet, I just go online and look at other people's levels and play them and check all that stuff out. So that's probably the same thing I'll do with Mod Nation is just play other people's stuff.
Yeah, the problem I had with Mod Nation, I had Mod Nation Racers on the PlayStation 3 and I got rid of it, was that it felt, when it came time for me to actually create a track, it kind of felt almost like a free-to-play type of experience where you had a large enough base to create, but it seemed like a lot of the cooler things that you wanted to do, or a lot of the cooler themes that you wanted to use, were all locked behind one-time purchases.
Oh wow!
And it was just like, I don't really feel like being nickel and dime for this stuff.
Yeah, no.
And I feel like Little Big Planet does a better job because they at least have like DLC where you can download that stuff, and it seems somehow better for a DLC pack than I want to buy this theme, so that's $1 at a time, and just, I don't like being nickel and dimed.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
Yeah.
So, other than Mod Nation, I've been playing, today I've been playing pretty much from 11 o'clock when I picked it up to now, because I'm unemployed right now, so I have time on my hands. So I've been playing Spec Ops The Line today for a review for the Game Effect. And that game's fun. I'm not going to go too much into it, but it's interesting. It's going to be a really challenging review to write because I don't know how to judge it, but I don't know how to really expand on that without giving away my review. So
Yeah. I understand that, and maybe we'll talk about that in the next segment when we do but you got anything else this week that you did?
I saw Brave.
Yeah, how was that? I've been hearing all right things. I've been hearing good things and bad things, so.
I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked that it was a strong female character in a Pixar movie, which doesn't happen often, and I really liked that there was no love interest for her in the movie. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. It actually does sound kind of awesome.
I just feel like young girls are always taught that they need to have a boy and they need to meet a man and have a Prince Charming, and they really don't, because there aren't many Prince Charmings out there.
No.
So, But so, it was good.
Yeah,
it was good. I recommend going to see it. It's not as good as like WALL-E or Up. Like those are my favorites from Pixar, but it's still really good.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, I've been hearing the mixed result thing, but I think that's mostly the audience and not necessarily the movie itself. So
yeah.
So let's do a little bit of an update on what we're doing with the Game Effect, since you know I don't really get to talk much about the Game Effect with another writer on the Game Effect. It's kind of fun to actually have a chance to tell people a little bit about the site in general, and have another writer on to share some of their experiences with it as well. So a couple things that I am working on coming up is I'm working on this one editorial, which it's a lot more research than I had anticipated. Because I literally, when I went into the idea of the psychology of game design in terms of the way game creators create games and why they do certain things, I had expected, you know, color choices, music choices, sound design, all that kind of like graphical kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I had never really anticipated much more than that. You know, there's certain things called, there's two types of different ways that our eyes are trained to work. And that's called a top-down perspective. And it's not necessarily top-down the way you think. It top-down means more objective-based. And is used primarily in, like, first-person shooters. So okay. What happens in a first-person shooter is that it's voluntary control for your perspective. And the observer is biased towards selecting stimuli that are related to the objective within a scene. So what they found, what the study in Penn State found was that as players were playing Halo 2, their eyes were always focused on the center of the screen because that's where you're trained to think in a first-person shooter. And as such, the game developers designed the game so that action always takes place in the center and hardly ever in your periphery. Because of the way you're trained to think with that kind of control. The other one that they use is called a bottom-up perspective, which is like color, brightness, contrast, orientation, shape, size, and lines in motion. And basically what this is saying is that your target color is a color that is a different among homogeneous distractors, i.e., if you're playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, you're going to see the red come up against your opponent, or they're going to be wearing something, a different type of color than the background itself, so that you can actually see that that's your target. Or in a game like in the study, they used Legacy of Kain, Blood Omen 2, and they had this one part where the players went to a door, and they went to the door right away, and tried the door right away, because that's the way you're trained, is to try the door. And a lot of them missed the key for the fact that the wall next to them was just a little bit lighter in color because of the way that the game portrayed the lighting in that room. Right. They also found that as characters moved closer towards an objective, that the color for that objective started getting brighter and brighter and brighter to lead them in that direction. So, and that their eyes were immediately attracted to that because they hooked them up to this eye scanning technology and watched them play the game while they're with this on, and they found through their eye movements where the players were looking during certain scenes of the game. So I didn't really ever take that in consideration. I mean, it's like almost Pavlovian in that aspect, but not even only that, but your actual eyesight varies so much that you actually focus on these things based on the perspective that you're using for the game, because they found that bottom-up is primarily used in action-adventure games. So I was really surprised to find a lot more than just, oh, colors mean, red means is anxious and all this other stuff. So it was that, it's turning into a bigger endeavor than I had hoped.
Well, yeah, like another thing that I've always thought about is something like just rewards in Diablo or even like when you pick up loot, you hear the sound and you see the flash and you see the stats go up. I mean, that's your instant reward and you get hooked. Like, yeah. And the same with like Call of Duty, when you see that +5 above someone's head when you shoot them, or you see when you level up, it does that guitar riff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's totally, people get addicted to that sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool, like, the actual psychology behind game design that people don't really take for granted, because psychology is almost always used against you. Against you is a bad word, and I would have to find a better word, obviously, but psychology is always used against us in game design, entertainment, and all entertainment, because especially one where you interact directly, because you're always constantly being rewarded, and that's your way of moving forward. Even in books, they use, like, certain authors will, when they're writing a series, will introduce a concept and then just totally leave it. Like, I finished Clash of the Kings, and Martin mentions something in the book, and then the next 50 pages, he doesn't bring it up again until the end of, and then at the end of the book, he doesn't even bring it up after that. And right. So it's like, well, now I got to read the next book.
right, exactly.
So it's that kind of stuff is kind of cool. So what are you working on besides your review of Spec Ops: The Line?
Yeah, well, that review, and I started doing a lot of research and outlining a story on the whole 38 Studios thing that happened. I feel like the dust has kind of started to settle on that enough to put together kind of a comprehensive, like, retelling, I guess, of everything that happened, and try and figure out where it went wrong and what exactly happened there, because it just seems like they failed so miserably.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to comprehend just how quickly it went down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some really interesting stuff out there. I mean, the governor of Rhode Island has lawyers looking into 38 Studios and seeing what they did wrong. So it'll be interesting to see what they find. And then the whole thing with Curt Schilling this past week on the – I listened to the Red Sox radio station, which is out of Boston, which is what he used to go on there all the time and just promote, like, the game and stuff. And now he's going on there. And he went on there and talked about, like, how he lost $50 million and all this. And so that's really interesting. And I read this letter from a woman who was who claims to be a spouse of somebody that worked for 38 Studios. And she talked about how when this all went down, they weren't told anything. They were basically just at work one day and did not get their paychecks. And, like, wow. she told her husband, like, he was at work, and she called him, and she's like, hey, can you ask about paychecks? And because ours isn't in the bank. And so he's like, yeah, sure. And he didn't hear anything about it. I guess he asked, but didn't get an answer. And a week went on, and they still had not gotten paid. And then they were just told, we aren't paying you. It's like, are you serious right now? And now they're fighting because her family is supposed to take care of the moving costs, which was something that 38 Studios said that they paid 6 months ago when these people moved. Like, they moved, and then 6 months later, this is when, like, 38 Studios fell apart. And so the guy worked for them for 6 months, and in that 6 months, the 38 Studios said they would pay their moving costs, and they didn't. So they owed the movers all this money, and now the movers are, like, asking this family for the money. It's ridiculous. Like,
wow. I'd be really interested to see what you end up finding out on that, because that, I mean, I know Kingdoms of Amalur didn't do superbly well compared to the money, but it was hardly a flop either.
Yeah, I think they just spent too much on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they offered a ridiculous amount of collector's editions.
Yeah.
And hired talent that was probably way above the level. The level of hype for the game at the time.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what comes of all that. But yeah, that's one of the biggest stories this year. That has a lot of impact.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm looking into that, and I'm doing that. I've been working on a story for a while about video game education and success rates in video game design schools, uh-huh. And I kind of put that to the side for a little while. I kind of shelved that for a little bit,
yeah.
But I'm still researching that. So,
yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's about it.
Oh, I forgot to mention, I should be having video reviews up on the Game Effect soon. I got the necessary equipment coming in the mail from Hong Kong, somehow. I don't know how
really?
It works. Amazon, thank you.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it should work out pretty well. And if I can get the problem that I have that I'm having with what I have to do is I have a software program on my computer that I'm going to use. I had to get an HDMI to USB cable to hook up to my laptop, and I'm going to use the HDMI cable from that I'm using to hook up my PlayStation 3 to my TV to the laptop to the TV. Mostly to test the delay in visual, because I'm not sure how much of a delay there's going to be on that. I'm not too worried about the recording delay. And if I play on just the computer, then I'm not too worried about it. I mean, my computer is a 17-inch screen. Maybe not necessarily the best quality for some of the games, but maybe to do a couple video reviews just to see how that works out and try and get some different content up on the Game Effect. And if that works out, then upgrade that to tournaments around here in the area for collectors at Collector's Corner under the Game Effect, where we're going to provide some prizes and stuff through the website. Josh has given up some of the art prints that he has that people aren't taken from the store that, I don't know. I have no idea. But it should be kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, video reviews would be huge.
Yeah.
If we could do that.
Yeah. If it works the way it's supposed to, according to the guy who helped me get all the necessary who told me what equipment to buy, and gave me the program, if it works the way he says it's going to work, then I'm hoping that around the time Darksiders 2 comes out in August, that I should have some reviews, a video review for Darksiders 2 up.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Cool. That's going to take a lot of memory, though. I don't know how much memory I'm going to have to use or exactly how I'm going to handle that, because you can't do, like, the entire game. You have to do probably, like 30 minutes or something. I don't even know how long. I have to talk to Josh once I get the actual aspect of getting it done worked out. I have to talk to Josh on how he wants to handle that. But if it works out, it works out. So I'm hoping that it'll work out.
Yeah, I hope so, too. It'd be good. If we could expand our YouTube channel, that'd be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't really have any content on the YouTube channel.
No. It would be good.
Yeah. Just having that extra outlet would be good.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, let's talk about working for the Game Effect. I mean, it's a smaller site.
Yeah, to say the least, yeah.
To say the least. And we are definitely paid writers. Paid more freelance style than anything. We're not like a staff.
Right.
So why don't you... I've had some decent experiences with some of the smaller indie developers in terms of getting content from them. Have you had any like experience like getting any you just had an experience getting some content?
Well, yeah, I mean, the best thing for me was PAX East.
Yeah,
like, that was huge. And one of the things, like, when I signed up as media, you probably got this too, because you were signed up for a media badge, right?
Yeah, yeah, I still get emails and everything, so.
Yeah, you get all those press releases. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Some of them are just crap that I don't really want or care about, but some of them are cool. Every once in a while, I'll get a cool one that I'm like, oh, that's nice, and I'll get offered, like, you know, I got the Quantum Conundrum review codes, which was nice. I mean, it's good, and PAX East was great. I interviewed a lot of people, and like Spec Ops, I played that there and interviewed the creative director of that, and so that was cool. But one of the things, like, you go after like indie developers, and I think that's awesome, because that's obviously, like, I love indie developers, but I kind of, like, you kind of had that, and I didn't want to do that too. So I was trying to think, like, what could I do, and I haven't gotten any lately, but I did I had the Unsung Heroes thing going for a little while.
Yeah.
And I had a couple interviews lined up that didn't that fell through. But basically, like, it's so difficult to reach out to people who are in charge at these companies. Like if you want to talk to the creative directors and stuff like that, you need to go through PR.
Yeah.
And that's why PAX worked, because it all went through their PR.
Right.
But for us, because let's face it, like, PR people don't really care that much about the Game Effect.
No.
So for, like, the bigger games, it's really difficult to get in touch with any of the creative leads or anything like that. So I did a lot of research on games that are already out. And I interviewed, and the funny thing is, the two that I have written for the Unsung Heroes weren't people for games that were already out, but I did the interview of the PR manager for Square Enix, and I did the interview of Rob Kehoe from well, he's on Game Informer, but he's a tester. He was a tester at 343, and he tested on Halo 4, and now he's at Bungie testing their next project.
Right.
So I interviewed them, and I had one lined up with an artist from Insomniac, but he just couldn't line up a good time, and it fell through because they are really busy with their next game. He's working on Overstrike right now.
Oh, nice.
But he was a nice guy. It just fell through, and I'm working on getting one right now with the designer of the effects designer on Spec Ops, the line.
Oh, that'll be cool.
Because I talked to Corey Davis, and he said he'd be a cool guy to interview. So he's going to try and hook me up with him. Now that the game is over, now that, you know, the game is out and it's done, they're done making it. So that'd be a cool time to interview them. But like, what I figured is all those people that work on those smaller parts of the game that don't really get the recognition that maybe they deserve, like, they also have their own private emails, and they're pretty easy to find. Like, if you try to find Casey Hudson's private email, it's kind of hard to find. But right. if you want to find, like, the third string artist on Mass Effect 3, he probably has his own blog, which has all his art on it.
Right.
On that is his email, yeah. So...
And luckily credits are pretty... I mean, you can find the credit information for most games online pretty easily.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so... Yeah, on the same page, the indie effect has kind of taken a fall lately because the indie developers are in the same boat where the game effect is small and they'd like the press, but there are also some that they just don't care.
Right.
It's like, what are your followers on Facebook going to help us with? Like, how is that going to help us? Kind of thing. The industry is. I'm starting to learn that journalism is very much a you scratch my back and I'll scratch your back. What are you going to provide that we can get out there for our fans?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because I don't know. Like, when I started on the Game Effect, when I started writing for the Game Effect, somebody apparently had like 20 retweets of a story that they had because they sent it out to like Epic Games, some guy at Epic Games who tweeted it out, and then Cliffy B apparently tweeted it out, but like that was the only time I'd ever seen a retweet of that. I heard of any kind of retweet like that.
Wow.
So yeah. I mean, like, I've done my best that on Twitter to kind of put the mentions in there in stories that are putting the developers in a good light. Like my review for Max Payne 3, I mentioned them in the Rockstar Games in the tweet out for the Game Effect, and they didn't even bat an eye towards it. They just kind of moved along.
Yeah, I know. The same thing. Like, well, when I did my preview of Spec Ops, like, it was a really positive preview, and I tweeted that to the guy I interviewed, and he tweeted it out. So that was nice. Like, if they know you, they tend to do it. Like, I know Adam Boyes from Sony, because I interviewed him. He used to work. He used to have a company called Beefy Media, and he's the one who hooked me up with PID at PAX East, and I played that there, and now he's head of marketing at Sony. So, like, he's in, like, a bigger position, but it's cool because I still have that contact, so he knows me. So,
right.
Hopefully, if I can just... It's so much networking and like, just keeping your name out there. And
yeah.
There's so much to that.
Yeah, there's a lot to it that you don't consider at first, like maintaining that professional image.
Right. Yeah, it's so much more than just writing.
Oh yeah, no, it's you have to constantly. I mean, I think David Jaffe at this point just doesn't even want to see a tweet from me anymore because I've harassed him for an interview for like months.
That's awesome. You should keep doing it.
Yeah, I'm just gonna keep harassing him. Every couple weeks I send him a tweet when I see him like talking about having some free time. I'm like, oh, by the way, you should do an interview with us at the Game Effect.
But, yeah, I've asked him. I've asked Ken Levine. I need to keep doing it. I need to be persistent.
Yeah. I need to, like, when Bethesda announced, when Rockstar, somebody, when EA announced that, that they were going to open up another, studio in Baltimore, I was like, oh, well, maybe I can get,
I'm right here.
Like I have to try and find Bethesda Studios down in Bethesda. Actually, go down there to Bethesda one day and try and like track them down, because they're literally in my neck of the woods. I could probably take a day trip down to Bethesda Studios and
just
start hounding them until they give me a studio tour.
Yeah, seriously, I almost did the same thing with 38, and it's no wonder I never heard back from them. I emailed them and called them several times and never heard back from them. And that was back in like February, so I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know? Like.
Yeah. It's starting to make sense, but.
Yep.
it is difficult because you have to network, and that's why I kind of thought the Indie Effect would be a good place to start for my networking, because among indie developers, there's kind of like a brotherhood there where they all kind of discuss ideas with each other. So I figured, well, let's start with the small guys and build a reputation among them, and then maybe when they have a run-in with somebody big, they can pass my name along.
Right.
So that's the only thing I can... That was the thinking behind that, and it works to an extent, but it's the same thing when you reach out to somebody new, and it's like, well, who are you?
Yeah, exactly.
So...
Sorry, I just thought of this when we were talking about, like, Twitter and stuff. It's kind of going back to that, but... Like, one of the cooler things was when I did my I Am Alive article, all about what happened there. And I reached out to several people involved and got one email back from somebody who worked on the game at Darkworks. And he was my anonymous source for the game, for the article. And... That was really cool. I really enjoyed doing that. And I have a feeling that he somehow, like, spread that around anonymously.
Yeah.
Because he's French, and it became a huge story in France.
Wow.
And I tracked it to a bunch of, like, big French video game websites, and it was all over in France.
That's
cool. Yeah, I think, like, Eurogamer... France cited it in a news story, like just talking about how effed up the whole situation. We can swear on this show, can't we?
Yeah, we can.
How fucked up that fucking situation fucking was.
Yeah, this is the bad boy of the GIO podcast.
Awesome.
So.
I like it.
Yeah, I'm the one who talks about about my other site that I work for.
I like it. So that was cool. That was awesome to see. Like, that was cool.
Yeah, that was a good article. I remember reading that article after I wrote my review for that game, which was that was a tough review to write, because I found myself in the very beginning of the game kind of enjoying it and enjoying the mood and atmosphere of the game.
Yeah.
But it just felt like they got so... Like your story said, they got so caught up in all the change of staff so much that the game just became, we need to get this out. Let's
right.
just go with what we have.
Right.
Because combat situations were literally, okay, you stop, you shoot one guy, you hope the other guys are scared enough of you that you can push them into an environmental object, or the other situation is you wait until the one guy comes up to you, you surprise attack him to get the instant kill, you quickly switch to your gun, shoot the one guy that has the gun, and then the other guy should surrender. And it's like that until you get the bow and arrow, and even when you get the bow and arrow, which does offer a little bit more challenge, or not necessarily challenge, but a different pace, because you can actually, like, not worry about being seen or heard from enemies.
Yeah.
But it just felt like we need to get this out.
I didn't mind the combat too much in that, but the platforming was just really annoying because I hated the stamina meter.
See, I didn't have a problem with the platforming.
I'm so conditioned by Uncharted. I just couldn't stand the stamina meter because it left so little room for error.
Yeah, but that's kind of what I enjoyed about it. And even in my review, I wrote about how I felt like the entire game I was playing it, and you're told from the beginning of the game, from all the marketing of the game, that you are supposed to survive and you're given limited resources. So I never used any of my resources unless absolutely necessary. And that by the time I got to the end of the game, I'm like, well, I got hit by a gun. Let me heal up real quick. Let me eat this food and I'm healed. Because I just had a plethora of stuff that I didn't need, that I didn't use.
Right.
So yeah. So let's talk about it. What games have you reviewed so far this year? I can't remember.
This year, The Walking Dead 2, one, but I'm just thinking because 2 is coming out tomorrow. I'm really excited to play it. The Walking Dead Episode 1 and Syndicate, and I think that's it this year.
Yeah. Now, do you find yourself going into a different mindset when you review a game for the Game Effect than you would if you were reviewing a game on your personal blog?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
now, how do you go about it? How do you go about the review process?
Do you take notes?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. And I should. But I don't. I think I play the game twice. When I play for a review. So that reminds me of stuff. I just do better when I don't have notes. I should take notes, but I don't. I play the game twice. I play it on normal. I don't up the difficulty or anything if I just don't, because I like to review it on normal. That's the way they wanted it to be played. If people want to play it on hard, they can play it on hard. And plus, I suck at games. So, and then I try to put as much time into the multiplayer as I can. And I, you know, play every mode and try to play around with every weapon and stuff. And a lot of times, like, when I'm playing for a review, I sometimes do things that I wouldn't do if I was playing on my own.
Right.
Like, almost like play like a tester. Like, sometimes try to break the game and just explore and see if things happen that aren't supposed to happen.
I feel kind of the same way. I play once. I play a normal playthrough, and then I play any multiplayer modes that I have. And going into that review, I sit there and I play the game and I start analyzing every aspect of it more than I would usually. I find myself doing a lot more. I take the notes. I'll play for like an hour or two at a time. For some reason, it seems like I have Tuesdays off except for today. And so games come out on Tuesday. So when Max Payne 3 came out, I picked up Max Payne 3 at the midnight release and ended up sitting down on Tuesday with it and playing pretty much through the first act and a little bit into the second act before I had to stop, because that game ended up being a lot longer than even I had thought it was going to be. I expected about a 5 to 10 hour single player you're conditioned to for shooters nowadays, and was quite pleasantly surprised with the actual length of the game once I got it. But yeah, I find myself overanalyzing things. I don't necessarily try to break the game. I try to play the game my way every time. So
I usually do that on the second playthrough.
Just play your way.
Yeah, I'll play a different way the second time through.
Yeah. Yeah. And that makes sense. I don't really care about trying to break the game, because if the game's played the way I want to play it, and the way I want to play it is not breaking the game, then I don't really see any reason to try and break the game, because it seems to me that almost any game can be broken if you try hard enough.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like fruitless to try and break a game because I'm not testing it. And I mean, with the multiplayer mode, with Max Payne 3, a lot of the multiplayer was locked behind a ton of experience that you needed, and you didn't get a lot of experience during a course of a standard match to really unlock that kind of stuff. But I did get a decent enough feel for what the multiplayer had to offer, and enough to know that it was fun. It's probably mostly passable in terms of, you know, my standard experience with what I enjoy with multiplayer. But a lot of people seem to be enjoying it, and Rockstar is doing a great job of getting their developers out there into the lobbies for people to play against. So, I've had hard reviews. Like, I was Slant Six Games and I, right before leading up to Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, they had been on Twitter pretty cool with me until I actually had to review Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, and that was a really tough review to write for me because. Yeah. It was one of those situations where I had been building up that relationship with the developer, and they followed me on Twitter. And it was like, I'm going to tweet this out, and it's not going to be good. I ended up giving the game a 6, and I only gave it a 6 because I wanted to give it a 5, to be honest with you. I did not enjoy my single-player playthrough with that. It wasn't until I got the game online that I actually found a decent amount of enjoyment from it, but not enough to like warrant keeping the game around. So... But that was hard. That was hard to write because of that relationship that I had built up with them.
Did they retweet it or anything?
They didn't retweet the review. No.
No.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
But that game has actually gone on to do fairly well sales-wise, from what I hear. Yeah. So, I mean, good for them. I mean, people. And like I said, if you're playing the online portion of that game and that's all you touch, then you're fine. But I could not excuse the lackluster single player. And as a reviewer, that's. That was part of my job, was to review all aspects of the game. You know, I had to sit offline for that 10-hour campaign and struggle through it, wanting to slam my fist into the TV the entire time. But, you know, I got it online, did the co-op online, and I was like, I should have just played it online the entire time. I would have enjoyed it way more.
I'd say that's one of the hard things about the Spec Ops review, because I – have a feeling, I haven't read any other reviews, but I have a feeling that the single player is going to be really good and the multiplayer might not be.
Right.
And I'm like trying to think in my head, like, how am I going to review this? Because I feel like, how important is a single player and how important is multiplayer? You know, like Dead Space 2, I loved it and I would have given that a great review. But the multiplayer was crap. I didn't want to play that. So the same thing is possible. Like, I'm really enjoying Spec Ops single player so far.
Right.
I think I'm probably about halfway through. And so I guess I'm not sure. Like, that's one of the challenges I think is going to be trying to figure out how to score it. Because I know the words I'm gonna give, you know, I know what I'm gonna write. It's always the score that really stumps me sometimes.
Yeah. And do you read any reviews for any of the games you're reviewing before you write the review at all?
I try not to. For Syndicate, I think I read one before I reviewed
it. Yeah, I go along the same route. I read about one just to kind of figure out if I had a similar experience.
Right.
Just to make sure I'm not like totally like off kilter.
Right.
Because then it might be something where I missed something somewhere, but for the most part, I found that my reviews tend to resonate with other critics, so I'm not that concerned. I don't feel like a Jim Sterling where my review is totally, like, just based on me wanting to make a point.
Right.
So, but, you got anything else to add to this conversation before we move on to the movie of the week and our break?
No, I don't. No, that was a good conversation. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was a really good conversation. Well, movie of the week this week is Alien. Get a little celebration for Prometheus, which I haven't seen yet. I want to see, but...
Oh, you gotta see it.
Yeah, I know. I need to. I keep hearing great things. But Alien, Sigourney Weaver, the first and the best of the Alien films, in my opinion.
Definitely.
I'll give this one little... interesting tidbit, because we don't really need to... If you haven't seen Alien yet, you need to get out of your rock and go see it. The scene in Alien where the alien first appears and the chest popper appears...
Yep.
...was actually filmed on accident. So,
what?
Yeah, what Ridley Scott did for that scene was they told everybody what was supposed to happen, and they set up the effect and everything, and the effect failed the first time. So everybody's leaning in to kind of like figure out why the effect failed, and then Ridley Scott had planned it that way so that they would all lean in, and then he set it off. So he got a truly genuine reaction out of the actors. So the point where some of the actors had to leave the set because they couldn't handle the fright from that scene.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like I read this article about like all these like these things that directors had done to like to pretty much jerk off their actors in movies. Like the scene in The Exorcist where she throws up the pea soup all over the guy.
Right.
It was only supposed to like hit his shirt, but it ended up hitting him in the face because that's the way that that's way. He wanted it done instead, right. But he wanted to get that absolutely disgusted reaction without actually letting him know it was coming.
I read that article too. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a really cool article.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be back in. Yeah, we'll be back.
All right.
Mother, tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words, what they mean, what they say. Mother, mother, can you keep them in the dark for a while? Can you have them from a wedding world?
That's it. That's the break. We're back. time for more video game talk. Actually, this has been all video game. This has been the video game power hour.
If you listen to the fourth floor for their witty banter and movies and TV talk, then sorry to disappoint you.
not this week. So I recently finished Mass Effect 3, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the series and the whole. Let's petition the ending PR fiasco that is happening right now. You had wanted to do a group review for the Game Effect for Mass Effect 3, and I wasn't able to, at the time of the game's release, to participate because I hadn't even played Mass Effect 2 yet.
Right.
So you have a better foundation on the series, so I'll let you give a brief... just provide a brief review for how you feel the series is overall.
All right, sure. I would say it's probably the greatest franchise of this generation for video games. For me personally, I look at, you know, like how Halo's been, Gears of War, Uncharted, all of those have been great, but nothing has really stood out to me like Mass Effect. Like just the way that your choices affect the story. And like, the ending aside, your choices do affect the story, because my story is much different from most people's, because I'm not normally an RPG player, but I really loved the first Mass Effect. Like, I was surprised. I took a chance on it, and I really enjoyed it. And then the second one, the same thing, but... I don't play them like RPGs. I don't go out there and explore, and I don't try to do all the side quests and all that stuff. And I didn't do a lot of loyalty missions in Mass Effect 2.
Oh, no.
So I had a lot of people die at the end of Mass Effect 2.
Oh, gosh. And
unlike most people, Mass Effect 3, I only had two other crew members the entire game.
Oh, my gosh.
I had Liara and James for the entire game of Mass Effect 3. Those were my two choices. Or maybe I had one more choice.
You didn't have Edie?
I had Edie, too.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say.
I had three other choices.
Yeah, my four choices in Mass Effect 3 were Garrus, Edie, and James, and Liara.
Yeah, well, I talked to Jeremy, and he was listing off, like, eight different people that were in his crew, and I was just like, nope, I did not have them. And so my experience was very different from most people's. And so people can't say that it's it doesn't vary, because it does. And I just, that's something that's so uniquely video game, that only games can do, and they can only tell a story that way. Nothing else that we have right now can tell a story like that. So, I love them. They're honestly not my favorite games of this generation, but they're up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could only start off with Mass Effect 2 because I don't own a 360. So, and I had been kind of a, I guess, Mass Effect hater is the proper word. I really didn't want anything to do with the series at all. I had heard all this blah, 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 choice. And I remember I bought the game, not necessarily begrudgingly, from GameStop used, just to give it a shot. I was like, all right, I'm going to see what this is like. But, of course, content that actually made Mass Effect 2 worthwhile was locked behind an online pass, but I didn't feel like paying $60 for the game at the time, so I didn't really enjoy it. I felt that I used the male Shepard, and I didn't like the way his voice sounded with the character that I created, with the face that I created for my character.
Yeah.
And just in general, I kind of felt like, whatever, this game is terrible, and I just stopped playing, and I ended up trading it in. I ended up returning it and getting a different game. And then about a couple months back, my friend Derek is in my ear about Mass Effect 3. He's like, you got to get Mass Effect. Oh, he's playing Mass Effect 2 at his house, and I'm watching him play, and I'm going, man, that looks really fun. Like, I got to get into that. So I find it new. I finally break down and go, all right, I'll purchase it new. So I purchased it new, got through the Cerberus Network content where you actually got to do, like, the graphic novel kind of thing at the beginning. And when the game actually kicks off at that point and you've actually made choices it previously and it actually, like, talks about those choices that you had made, that, to me, was kind of like, all right, I see why people were getting really excited, why people really like this game. And then I also went with a female Shepard. I went with Fem Shep for the playthrough because I wanted to eliminate that taste of male Shepard's voice and facial pattern. And actually ended up with a really decent-looking Fem Shep for the way her voice sounded, and managed to play through both games. And yeah, I mean, I get to the ending and I go, I don't know why people are upset about this. I didn't really notice that my choice didn't matter. I made a choice at the end that on how to deal with the Reapers, which I thought was the point of the game the entire time. So I don't see how my choices didn't lead up to an ending, other than maybe I got a generic cutscene that everybody else got.
Right, which, I'm not playing Mass Effect for the very last 5 minutes of it. I'm playing for the whole journey and the action and the story and the characters. Like,
right.
I don't know. I felt like I was really satisfied with the ending.
Yeah, I was pretty satisfied. I'm going to end up downloading, I mean, the extended ending DLC is free. So when I finally get around to clearing up some of my backlog of games and I'm ready for another round at Mass Effect 2, I'll probably start over Mass Effect 2. I'll just start over Mass Effect 2. I've already played Mass Effect the way it was supposed to be played. So I'll start over with Mass Effect 2 and start over with the male Shepard and make different choices the entire time and see, you know, what's different. I refuse to go back to my old character now because that character's story's done. And that's just the way I feel about it.
Hey, yeah.
That's just how I feel. I just feel like that character's story's done. My Shepard did what she wanted to do, and that's what happened. And honestly, you make so many choices throughout the game. I doubt if I play Mass Effect 2 again, start at Mass Effect 2 again, that I'll make the same choices. The only loyalty mission that I'll probably have a trouble with is Samara's, because I had trouble with that on the first one. I totally botched that interaction with her daughter. That was terrible. But she didn't die. Tally did, and so did Legion. And I killed Miranda, which I was happy of. But,
I liked Miranda.
I didn't like Miranda. I don't know why. I just felt like the idea for the character that I had for Shepard from the way that I envisioned her was that she was the queen of the ship and that Miranda was encroaching on her property.
I hear you. So, like, I wanted to like Miranda a lot more than I did. So I guess that was part of it, was that I didn't like Miranda because she was such a bitch sometimes. Yeah. And I wanted her to be nice to me and I wanted her to have sex with me and she wouldn't. And I guess that was part of what I liked about her, was that she defied my expectations.
Yeah.
And then in the third game, like, she was actually kind of nice and noble, and I felt like that character had run its course, so that was good.
I don't know what happened to her, because she died in the second one.
Oh, yeah, right.
I don't know. And that's why I say I'm going to start over at Mass Effect 2, because it's time to see what happens this time.
Exactly.
And because essentially, the Mass Effect series, I feel like BioWare, if they could get the rights back from Microsoft for Mass Effect 1, could release a 3-disc set of Mass Effect as the Mass Effect trilogy with all the DLC on it and sell it for $100, and people would eat it up like hotcakes.
Right. Oh, definitely they would.
Yeah, I mean, you get all three games in one place plus all the DLC. I mean, that would be like every Mass Effect fan's like dream come true. Because it really is just one game. I mean, the gameplay elements change from game to game, but that's not necessarily something. It doesn't seem like that would be necessarily difficult for them to go back to on one and update the gameplay mechanics from three to make it fit throughout all three. That's a lot of code, though, but
yeah,
you could do it if you really wanted to make that money.
Yeah,
but
that'd be cool. I'd play it, maybe.
I would buy a huge collector's edition for $100 of all three games.
Yeah,
with all the DLC, and maybe next generation when we're doing super HD remixes of from this generation, we'll get a Mass Effect collection.
Maybe. Yeah, they're not going to really be able to have those next generation, cuz they already have them and all HD already. They're going to have to come up with something new.
I know, they'll actually have to make new games.
Well, I know.
Well, actually, I mean, I've done research on this, and new games tend to release at the beginning of a console cycle. We get new IP at the beginning of a console cycle.
Right.
Generally, because that's when developers are willing to take a risk, because everything's new.
Yeah.
We're reaching the end of this cycle, and that's all that's why we're getting this stale feeling in our mouths. We're also getting some great games right now, and I mean, in my opinion, so far 2012 has been fantastic for games.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had Journey, you've had Fez, which I haven't played, but I've only heard fantastic things for.
It hurts my brain.
It hurts your brain?
Yes.
You've had Journey, you've had Fez, you've had Max Payne 3, which to me is still ruined video games for me. I still play games and go, I want Bullet Time. I want Max. I mean,
yeah, Max Payne 3 more than I did. I liked Max Payne 3 a lot, but I would have given it probably like an 8.5.
Really?
On the game effect, yeah.
Yeah. I totally, when I reviewed Max Payne 3, I totally ignored the multiplayer aspect of it and did not really factor that too much into the score. Because to me, Max Payne has always been about Max Payne. And it seems like Rockstar added the multiplayer because we want multiplayer. And to me, that was not a deciding issue for me for why I wanted to play Max Payne, or why it should be a deciding issue for anybody to want to play Max Payne. So, that was 9.8 to me just... That game just blew me away. There was nothing wrong with that game.
All right, so let me ask you, because you've played a bunch of games this year and you've given some pretty high scores. So Max Payne 3, Journey, Mass Effect 3, any other games? Like, what would you say is number one for you right now?
Number one for me right now is a tie between Journey and Max Payne.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you're a big fan of Journey.
Huge, yeah. That's easily my game of the year.
Yeah, when we come up to game of the year nominations at the end of the year, if that is not on at least half of our editors' list, I will be I'll be sorely disappointed. Dylan will be the one who like champions some weird extreme game that I'd never heard of. Well, actually, last year he did Bastion. He was big on Bastion last year.
Yeah, he was.
He pushed Bastion big last year, so we'll see what he does this year, because Journey to me has been almost a lifesaver. I don't really want to get too much into it, but I've been 31 days sober, and one of the games that kind of reminds me of those times before I got sober was Journey. So that whole game to me, I played that game. I haven't played it recently, but that whole beginning of the game where you're kind of lost in the desert, and it's just like you're lost. There's nothing there, and then you get into that part where you're in the caves, and it's all dark and despair, and then you come out of the mountain, and it's that. That game is just so beautiful.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
I just played it again. Well, I didn't play it, but I watched Taryn, my girlfriend, play it this past weekend. She played through it again, and she used my white robe. And
you got a white robe?
I have the white robe.
Oh.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to get that yet.
It's not that hard. I only had to look up one of the pieces on a YouTube video. But yeah, she used that and she loved it. The white robe's great. I wanted to write like a guide for how to find all the pieces for the white robe.
Uh-huh.
And it there aren't that many. There's probably like 30 maybe.
Uh-huh.
Maybe even less. But I didn't know how to write it and make it still like interesting, because not to make you feel bad, but like most of the people I meet now in Journey have white robes. So
yeah, I haven't played it in a while, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just play it constantly.
Yeah.
I seriously have played it 6 times.
Yeah.
So
I've played it about 4 or 5 times, but I played it all like when it first came out and nobody had anything. So
right.
Nobody knew where anything was, and that game is easily probably game of the year in my opinion. I will be champion for Max Payne 3 as well for action game of the year.
Yeah.
But I will probably fight tooth and nail for Journey to be game of the year. I don't really see anything coming out unless Resident Evil 6 somehow blows the doors off of everything, which Capcom could still possibly do. I have a feeling that series though is pretty much dead in the water at this point. I don't really see Resident Evil 6 doing anything that fantastic. I have a feeling it'll be fun to play, and when I pick it up, I'll probably end up giving it about a 7 or an 8, just because I have a feeling it'll be at least fun. But I don't really see Capcom blowing anybody away with that title anymore, with that series anymore.
You don't think so, huh?
Huh?
You don't think so?
No.
I have high hopes for that game.
I have high hopes for it too, but I don't think Capcom has it in them to pull it off right now. I think with all the shakeups that are going on staff wise with them, you know, they've been going through a lot of shakeups staff wise.
Yeah, that's true.
So I mean, and with the West pretty much leading game development right now in terms of quantity of sales, I mean, it's hard for the East to get that financing.
Sorry, my dog's barking.
That's fine. Barking earlier too.
My parents just getting home, I think. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't count out Japanese developers, especially Capcom. I think Capcom's kind of been doing the best out of all the Japanese developers.
Capcom has been doing really well. I really want to be able to get a copy of Dragon's Dogma when I have some extra money.
Yeah.
Because I've only heard fantastic things about that as well.
Yeah, me too.
I have a feeling that's going to end up being another Skyrim for me where it just never gets finished. I could not tell you where I am in the Skyrim main quest line.
Yeah.
I could tell you that I'm level 44.
Nice.
And that I'm working on finding the Dragon Priest, but I could not tell you where I am in the main quest line.
I need to go back to Skyrim.
Yeah, I'm going to get back into Skyrim pretty soon. I'm waiting for Dawnguard to release on the PlayStation 3, but I don't know. They haven't really talked about a release date for that on PlayStation 3 yet, other than the 360 timed exclusives, which I'm about to write a blog on Game Informer about. I don't really want to do an editorial on the Game Effect for that, because it's more rant than anything. So I think that about covers the show. It's been good talking to you, Dan.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks
for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. We've been doing this for about an hour now, so we might as well wrap things up. Any plugs you want to make real quick?
Just Indian Mojo Show. Like us on Twitter at Indian Mojo, and like me, follow me on Twitter too. Indy Jones 84 on Twitter. I write stuff on the Game Effect. Yep. So that's what I do.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. No real plugs. I should plug, if you're unaware, I know you have your charity of the month, but we're doing Team GIO charity for Extra Life, which is like a gaming marathon where people can play for 24 hours straight and earn money to donate to a hospital, children's hospital of their choice.
Children's Miracle Network.
Yep.
Yeah, I have to sign up for that. I've been signed up for it, apparently. I get the emails from Jack, so.
Yeah.
So I got to sign up for that. I have to actually officially register myself, because I did that last year. That was a lot of fun. I actually played through Arkham Asylum that day.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that the participate in that again. That was really fun. 24 hours of gaming. I couldn't believe I made it through 23 and a half.
My co-hosts on Indian Mojo wouldn't let me wouldn't let me live that down if I didn't shout that out on the show.
Jeremy Brown is a good friend of ours here on the fourth floor, so.
Yes.
So. All right, Dan. Well, thanks for being. I almost called you Jeremy.
That's all right. I get it all the time.
Yeah. All right, Dan. Well, thanks for being on, and stay tuned for another episode, hopefully shortly. Peace.
Bye.
My front lawn. I know they're all thinking I'm so white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Can't you see I'm white and nerdy? Look at me, I'm white and nerdy. I wanna roll with the gangsters, but so far they all think I'm too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. I'm just too white and nerdy. Really, really white and nerdy.
First in my class, they're at MIT. Got skills, I'm a champion of D&D. MC Escher, that's my favorite MC. Keep your 40 out, just have an Earl Grey tea. My rims never spin, to the contrary, you'll find that they're quite stationary. All of my action figures are cherry. Stephen Hawking's in my library. My MySpace page is all totally pimped out. Got people begging for my top 8 spaces. Yo, I know pie to a thousand places. Ain't got no grills, but I still wear braces. I order all of my sandwiches with mayonnaise. I'm a whiz, a minesweeper, I can play for days. Once you see my sweet moves, you're gonna stay amazed. My fingers moving so fast, I'll set the place ablaze. There's no killer app I haven't run. At Pascal, well I'm number one. Do vector calculus just for fun. I ain't got a gap, but I got a soldering gun. Happy Days is my favorite theme song. I can sure kick your butt in a game of ping pong. I'll ace any trivia quiz you bring on. I'm fluent in JavaScript as well as Klingon. Part I sing on.
You see me roll on my Segway.